Nicholas Winding Refn presents a Nimbus film production in association with La Belle Allée Productions. White letters on a black background. In the beginning, there was only man and nature. Men came bearing crosses and drove the heathen to the fringes of the earth. In blood-red letters, Valhalla Rising. Part 1, Wrath. A lone figure stands on a foggy hillside. The silhouetted figure is small and distant, clad in a cloak that flaps in the wind. A mist shifts across the scrubland. A long-haired blonde boy lugs a bucket up the hill. Spread out along the fog-shrouded slope are numerous cloaked men with tall wooden spears. They're standing guard around a rickety wooden cage that has been erected against a craggy outcrop of rock. The fresh-faced blonde boy trudges up to the weather-beaten cage and looks in through its wooden bars, his lank hair quivering in the wind. Inside the cage sits the creature, a grubby-faced 40-something man with a grizzled goatee beard, tied back hair, and one eye. The boy sets the bucket down and serves a ladleful of gruel from it through the bars. The creature kneels bare-chested on the hill outside his cage. His wrists are bound with rope, and his back, daubed with crude black tattoo-like markings, is scarred with ugly lacerations. He is shackled by the neck. Burly bearded men in cloaks stand with their weapons angled at the man as the boy gently traces over his tattoos with an inky finger. In place of the man's left eye, there is merely the gnarled pink flesh of scar tissue. The boy leaves an inky handprint on the creature's right shoulder. Two bare-chested men fight in the mud. One man throws the other to the ground, then lands a heavy blow to his jaw. The motley band of men watch without expression as the two men slug it out. A high-ranking man, Malcolm, wears a philosophical expression, his apparent eminence signalled by an ornate brooch clasping his warm woolen cloak together at his right breast. One of the tattooed pugilists smashes his opponent's face into the earth, and the man lies unconscious. Malcolm nods to a diminutive man in a shawl who scurries round him to a grey-bearded chieftain perched on a rock. The chieftain, Bard, hands him a few coins, which he dutifully takes over to Malcolm. Malcolm smiles thinly. Long-haired Bard stares off in the opposite direction, with a calculated disinterest. Two broad-shouldered men lead the creature towards the muddy battleground by his collar. Clutching a bulging money pouch, the gaunt, kingly Malcolm watches, his face smeared with dirt. Head hung, the creature kneels, his collar now secured to a tall wooden stake by a long rope. The two axe-wielding men step away from him. Bard watches with pursed lips and a wrinkled brow as the boy goes gingerly over to the creature and starts to unbind his wrists. Before he can properly untie them, a man yanks the creature back into the mud by his leash. An opponent steps onto the churned-up soil and kicks the creature in the ribs. The creature charges at him, but the rope snaps taut, yanking him back by the neck. He falls flat on his back, then scrambles to his feet. His advancing foe wrestles him to the ground. The creature hooks a leg around the man's neck and pins him down, sinking his teeth into the man's jugular. The boy watches as another man tries to drag the creature off. The third man rains heavy blows on the creature, who rears up, tearing a chunk out of his main opponent's neck. The third man is thrown to the ground. The creature spits out some flesh and headbutts the man he just bit. The creature coils his rope around the man's neck and runs, pulling the rope taut. The man's neck snaps, and his head falls limp. The creature holds the rope tightly, squeezing any last vestige of life from his defeated foe. Grey-bearded Bard looks on inscrutably. The creature kneels with his fists clenched. The creature is led across the hillside by two men, one in front and one behind. To keep him at a safe distance, each has a long pole hooked to the creature's collar. A man with a dark, bushy beard holds his cage door open, and the men guide him in. One pole remains hooked to his collar. A man unwinds a chain from it and hands it to the boy, who steps into the cage to unhook the pole. The boy weaves the chain around the bars and feeds it out to a shaven-headed man who secures it to a boulder. As the chain is drawn taut, the creature is wrenched onto his side within the cage. He grits his teeth and sits with his back to the bars. Bard approaches and peers in through the cage door. His face cast in shadow, he regards the creature calmly. The creature gazes back with a brooding intensity. Night. Malcolm and Bard are alone. They sit face to face a little way from the other men. Malcolm speaks.
He's never belonged to anyone for more than 5 years. Your time has passed. Mine has come.
Bard stares fixedly at Malcolm, his silhouetted profile just one cracky object amongst others in the time-worn, weather-beaten landscape. In the dying light, the foggy terrain is rendered charcoal grey, the plunging lines of its ridges and escarpments blurred and indefinite in the murk. The creature sleeps in his cage. He dreams of blood-red waters. In his dream, he too is red. His face appears deep crimson against the slate-grey clouds. He stands chest deep in a natural pool, his neck shackled as always. The vivid red water is calm and still. His thin features appear ashen in the pale moonlight as he sleeps in his cage. Bare-chested, the creature is tethered to the stake. A broad, muscular man cracks him on the jaw. The boy looks on from the hillside as the creature flails in the mud. A clear day. Clothed, the creature picks up a heavy rock and carries it towards the boy who sits in the near distance. Rain beats down as, bare-chested, the creature continues his fist fight. A bearded clansman lazily wields a wooden spear. Other rugged men stare in at the creature through the gnarled branches comprising his cage. Flanked by two of his men, Malcolm watches as the tethered creature pins down his adversary and smashes a rock into the back of his head. As the man's brains spill from his shattered skull, the creature is dragged off by his rope. Malcolm and the elder exchange glances. His face blackened by the mud, the creature prowls like a dog on a leash. A clear day. The clansman twirls his spear and stabs it into the earth. A man hauls on the creature's chain, dragging him upright inside his cage. The boy scampers out of the cage and slowly walks away, shooting doleful glances back at the creature. The creature stands tethered to the post in the aftermath of his fight. He shifts from foot to foot and puffs out his chest victoriously. Day dawns. The creature is led across sloping misty moorland by the poles that they hook to his collar. The creature bathes in the still pool he dreamt about. Behind him, three guards keep watch from the water's edge. The creature stands chest deep in the water, as he did in his dream. He bends over, submerging himself completely. The water is clear, and the creature spots an arrowhead lying in the dirt. Keeping his head beneath the surface of the water, he picks up the arrowhead and studies it. He secretes it in his mouth and rises to the surface. Night. The creature is chained to a rock face on the hillside. He surreptitiously tests the arrowhead, unflinchingly slicing a gash in the palm of his left hand. Blood seeps from the thin wound. He dabs the cup with his thumb, then turns the pointy steel arrowhead between his fingers. He uses his fingers to dig moss from a crevice in the rock, then hides the arrowhead in the recess. He lies on his back and stares at the stars. Bard.
The bastards. These people. These followers of the White Christ. Bastards.
He addresses Kenneth, who has a tattooed forehead.
A much-traveled man once told me that they eat their own god. Eat his flesh, drink his blood. Abominable.
Bard stares.
And they hate us. Want us dead.
The boy looks in through the bars of the creature's cage.
So you pray to the gods to protect us.
The boy watches the creature sleep.
We have many gods. They've only got the one.
The clan marches in the half-light, leading the creature along by their poles. Day. Bard and Malcolm stand face to face in the open air.
Can't let him go. We need him.
Malcolm stares blankly.
You need money, chieftain. Like everyone else. It's the only way to reason with the Christians. You may as well get it from me.
Steely-eyed, Bard holds Malcolm's gaze for a moment, then shakes his hand. Bard withdraws his hand sharply and Malcolm clenches a blackened fist. The creature sits in his cage, thoughtfully turning the arrowhead between his fingers. He looks up to see the boy ladle some thin, milky gruel into his bowl through the bars of his cage. A squatting clansman watches as the boy sits down beside the creature's cage. The creature picks up his bowl of gruel. The boy eats a small mouthful of bread. The creature drains his bowl and tosses it down. The creature kneels, held at pole's length before Bard, who glowers at him suspiciously.
Who are you?
The creature stares up at him with a quiet insolence, his cold demeanor giving nothing away. The pale button-nosed boy sits nearby, wrapped in a blanket.
Hood him. Take him away.
Kenneth sets off with the creature, three armed guards, and the boy. They cut deathly figures as they trudge sullenly across the moors. The creature has a black sack over his head. They labor along in single file with the boy at the rear of the column. The creature gingerly pats the ground with his boots, searching for a safe footing as they pass through a shallow brook. Night falls and the men camp on a hillside out of the wind. The boy sleeps face down in the long grass. The creature remains at pole's length from his guard, with the black sack still secured over his head. Day. The men continue their journey. The creature covertly slips a hand inside his hood and works to free his collar using the arrowhead. As he's forced along the uneven ground by his captors, he comes close to slitting his own throat. The man at the front of the line is armed with an axe. They file up a steep incline past jagged boulders and jutting rocks. The creature whisks his hood off. Freed from his restraints, he hauls the first guard towards him by his pole and slits his throat with the arrowhead. He swipes the man's axe and dives to the ground, hacking the other guard in the back of the legs. The guard falls to his knees and the creature dispatches him in a shower of blood and gore. The creature leers menacingly, and another of the guards scarpers. Wide-eyed, the boy cowers behind a boulder. Kenneth casts a wary glance up the slope to where the creature stands tall, axe in hand. High above them, the mountainous slope disappears amidst an expanse of clouds. The creature stares up at them, the corners of his mouth downturned. Where they shroud the sun, the clouds appear brilliant white, but further along, they are tinged black and swollen with moisture. The creature regards them soberly. A cowed and beaten Kenneth is tied to a rock, his face covered in blood.
What do you see?
He struggles to get the words out.
Yourself?
The creature stares ahead, unmoved.
When I die, you will go back to hell.
Kenneth has been tied back in a cruciform position with his arms lashed tightly to the rock. The creature glances at Kenneth somberly. He tears Kenneth's top to reveal his belly, then slices Kenneth's stomach open with the arrowhead. The creature scoops out Kenneth's bloody viscera and dumps them at his feet. Kenneth slumps against the rock, his right hand groping stiffly at thin air, before slowly falling limp. Trembling, the boy cowers behind a rock. He steels himself and peers out to see the creature walking away up the hill. The creature dons a brown leather waistcoat and marches on. Bard.
He's driven by hate. That's how he survives. Why he never loses.
The creature carries a severed head by the hair.
He'll come because he has to come. To finish it.
The creature raises the head aloft and jams it on the blade of a spear he's driven into the earth like a stake. It's Bard's head. The creature steps back from the gruesome display and stares at it through narrowed eyes. He's standing on the patch of churned-up soil where he was forced to fight. The creature stands in silhouette against a jagged mountain range, Bard's head on the spear behind him. Part 2. Silent Warrior. The creature treks off up the desolate hillside. Far below, the boy follows him. Armed with an axe, the creature strides purposefully through the long grass. He comes to a halt and looks back. A safe distance behind, the boy stops too. He gazes timidly at the creature, who pauses for a moment, then carries on walking. The boy starts after him. The creature crouches by a shallow stream to wash. He splashes his grimy face and gives it a rub. The boy sits a little way behind, twiddling a small pendant which dangles from a string around his neck. The creature gazes back at him, then turns his head and stares off somberly. The boy looks up from his necklace.
Do you like it?
He looks at it again.
My father gave it to me.
Hard-faced, the creature stares off. Night falls. The boy sleeps on his blanket as the creature looks out over the inhospitable mountains, his redundant left eye socket clogged with mangled scar tissue. A vision, the creature in profile, his right eye similarly blighted, his face blood red against the shifting leaden clouds. Glimpsed through a crimson veil, murky figures slumped aboard a wooden ship, a sword resting in its scabbard. Day. A man kneels with his head bowed a little way from a Christian encampment. A wooden cross stands tall on a grassy mound, and a flag emblazoned with a red cross flaps in the wind. The creature and the boy crest a small rise nearby and look on at the camp in silence. Wispy smoke rises from a number of small fires. Christian flags dot the hillside. The kneeling man is leaning on a sword facing the cross, beyond which is nothing but the sweeping majesty of the mountains. The creature and the boy move closer to the encampment and come to a stop. A haggard old man sits against a rock, staring at them. Behind him sits a huddle of naked women. The creature turns his eye to the kneeling man, Eirik, who rises and turns to look at them.
Are you from the clans, warrior?
The boy looks at the creature. He doesn't respond. The boy looks back at Eirik.
No!
Why does the boy speak for you?
The creature glances at the 12 naked women huddled close against the cold with their knees drawn up to their breasts. A bearded warrior named Hagen studies the creature.
You Christians!
The boy looks around at the crosses and Christian flags. He considers.
Yes?
Silver-haired Eirik wears a chainmail waistcoat. He picks up his sword.
You're lying. I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Hagen.
I've heard about him. He's one of the biggest savages in Sutherland. Killed our chieftain's son. And most of his men as well.
The Christian warriors each sport a cross tattoo on their necks. The creature looks at Eirik.
Son!
Hagen rolls his eyes, his face is streaked with blood and grime, and his head is shaved but for a Mohican-style strip of hair. Eirik's son, Gorm, emerges nearby and labours up a slight incline to his father. They share a look. The creature is battle-ready. Gorm unsheathes his sword. Gorm starts towards the creature, who duly steps forward and readies his axe. Gorm stops in his tracks. His leather cape flaps about his shoulders as he stares warily at the creature, reluctant to do battle. The creature regards him with a simmering intensity. Smoke wafts towards the two men as charred grey corpses smoulder on the dying embers of a fire behind Gorm. Their eyes are locked. Eirik steps up beside his son. Gorm turns and walks away.
Does the mute have a name?
His name is One Eye.
One Eye. You can eat with us, then we can talk. Or at least the boy can.
The creature, One Eye, looks at the boy.
You need a name.
The boy lowers his eyes.
You've only got one eye.
Night. They sit around on the darkened hillside.
So, now you've got your freedom. What do you plan to do with it?
The boy's eyes rove in thought.
I want to go home.
Where is that?
One Eye sits biting his fingernails. The boy stares out over the landscape.
Don't know.
Hagen.
Maybe he could bring us luck.
One Eye looks thoughtful.
One Eye. I could use a good fighter like you. We are God's own soldiers, warrior. Heading for Jerusalem. To reconquer the Holy Land. There's great honor in it. Riches. Land. Isn't that right, soldier?
Yeah. That's right.
One Eye sits apart from the others. A white-bearded man, Kare, addresses him.
Endless warfare. It makes more tramps than heroes.
50-something Kare regards One Eye pensively, his brow heavy.
But you should come with us to Jerusalem. Your sins will be absolved, whether you live or die. You will see your loved ones again.
One Eye bows his head. Eirik.
Boy. Where does he come from?
He was brought up from hell.
One Eye sits stony-faced and statuesque in the fading light. An island unto himself.
So where is it, this hell?
On the other side of the ocean.
Kare stands at One Eye's side.
We are more than flesh and blood. More than revenge. All of these things go. You should consider your soul. That's where the real pain lies.
One Eye turns his head to look at Kare, who stares at him imploringly with his brow knitted. One Eye studies him inscrutably. Dark clouds shift over the blackened shapes of the mountains. The Christians stare out into the night. Gorm.
Do you think he'll come back?
Kare considers.
If it's God's will.
One Eye sits in shadow, his penetrating gaze fixed and unblinking. The stark image fades into that of an eerie and foreboding sea. Ripples play on its flat and wave-free surface as stars wink in the inky black firmament beyond. Part 3. Men of God. A thick fog rolls forth over the darkened waters until all is consumed within it. Tinted sepia. One Eye sits with the Christians on the deck of the ship he dreamt about. The men lie around languidly. Hagen sits with the hand to his mouth and his elbow resting on his thigh. He stares at the floor. A gaunt and stubbly man lies with his head lolled against the side of the ship, his eyes glassy and vacant. Beside him, a bearded man lies in a like position. Dead or alive, it is difficult to tell. A ubiquitous fog blinds the men to their surroundings. The boy lies on his side at the prow of the ship. He blinks. Gorm's head is bowed.
My father told so many tales of the Holy Land. And I never tired of listening to him. All about his beauty, his wealth.
Gorm glances at one of his shipmates but gets no response. Kare sits with the boy.
Do you know what I do when I'm scared?
The boy shakes his head.
I pray to Christ. Do you know who he is?
He shakes his head again.
He sacrificed his life so that we could be free from pain and misery.
Kare stares gravely at the boy.
You see, that's what we're doing. We're going to protect his land, his kingdom. So you have to be strong.
The boy hangs his head, then glances uncertainly at One Eye. Unconvinced, One Eye looks away. The omnipresent mist clouds the boat. Hagen sits with Eirik.
Never seen a mist like this before. So far from the shore. It's been so long. Days.
Perhaps it's a curse.
It's not a curse. It's just a mist. Nothing more.
Hagen sighs and rises from his seat. A new day dawns and the sun hangs hazy in the sky. Facing the prow, the men kneel before their swords as Kare leads them in prayer.
This ship is yours, Lord. These men are yours, Lord. These swords we bear are for you, Lord. We ask you to send the wind to lift this mist. We ask you, Lord, to send the wind to guide us on the path to your land, to the Holy Land. We ask you, Lord, to put your hand with our hands to guide us to your kingdom.
One Eye does not join the men in prayer, but instead sits against the side of the boat with his head lifted and his eye open. Hagen glances back at him. The sun burns brightly beyond the mist, its orange hues radiating across the gently undulating surface of the water. The men are scattered about the deck, slumped against wooden benches. One of them picks up a tankard and dunks it in the water beside the boat. He raises the vessel to his parched lips and drinks. One of his shipmates looks back at him.
Don't do it again. You'll die.
That's what we are doing. We are going to protect his land, his kingdom.
Hagen sits with a hand to his mouth, as he did before. He furrows his brow, lifting his eyes towards the boy who sits in front of Kare.
So you have to be strong.
Night. The men stand in the mist, their identities lost in the haze. Two of them bend down and lift a dead shipmate from the floor of the boat. Between them, they carry him to the side of the boat. Kare stands with his head bowed respectfully. The two men roll the corpse overboard. The men sit down. One Eye sleeps. Another vision strikes him as he slumbers. In it, he faces his mirror image. The vision vanishes. He sees crimson waters. In the waking world, the men are hunched like gargoyles on the deck of the slowly drifting ship.
No winds.
Hagen.
No current. It's a curse.
Do you think the boy could be the cause of this?
Of course.
How are we going to kill him?
The men frown. A shaven-headed man lying down behind Hagen.
I'll do it.
Hagen turns his head and the man sits up. Moonlight glances off his shiny scalp. He has large ears and a prominent beak-like nose. He draws a dagger and prowls forth through the shadows. He angles the blade downwards and reaches out towards the sleeping boy. One Eye springs up and stabs him in the gut. He grabs the man by the throat, withdraws the blade from his stomach, and casually pushes him overboard. His shipmates rise and draw their swords. One Eye stands between them and the boy, with his axe at the ready.
It was a boy.
Shut up!
He killed one of our men!
Back off!
Do something!
I warned you what would happen now. Back off!
Eirik stares one of the men down. The man turns away. One Eye stands firm. Eirik glowers at One Eye. One Eye stares back unfazed. Eirik lays down his knife and sits down with the others. One Eye stows a blade inside his jacket, spins the axe in his hand and sinks to a sitting position with his gaze trained on the men. The boy stands behind One Eye, awake and alert. One Eye glances back at him, then faces forward to resume his vigil. Beyond the ship's mast, the moon glows bright silver. Eirik looks at One Eye with his brow pinched. One Eye is unshaken. Eirik turns to Kare.
The boy said he was from hell. Maybe that's where we're going.
Dispirited, Kare cradles his head in one hand. He looks up slowly to meet Eirik's gaze. One Eye looks out into the murk. A brilliant white orb burns beyond the mercurial ocean. The light subsides. The sword that One Eye dreamt about rests upright in its scabbard. Its pommel is round, and the crossguard has trident-shaped prongs at either end. One Eye sleeps beside the boy. A heavy wooden tankard rolls from side to side on the deck. One Eye stands up at the prow. He stares at the men lying motionless about the dimly lit deck. He puts a hand on the tankard and rights it. Kare wakes up and looks over at him. One Eye leans overboard. He dunks the tankard into the water, then stares at it. One Eye lifts the tankard to his lips and drinks greedily. An emaciated Hagen watches with a thin smile. The boy wakes. One Eye turns to Hagen and proffers the tankard. Hagen sits up and grasps it with his hand clasped over the rim.
You want me to die?
One Eye just stares at him. He takes a few mouthfuls, then lowers the tankard from his lips. His hand trembles. He brings the vessel to his mouth again and glugs some more. One Eye has his back to Hagen. Hagen stands up facing his men.
It's fresh water.
He goes to drink more, but Eirik snatches the water from him and swigs thirstily. The boy lies prostrate on the floor. He tries to push himself up, but he is too weak. One eye looks down at him. Clutching one of the ropes that trails from the mast, Eirik lolls his head back. He holds the wooden tankard at his side. One eye gazes out into the mist. Part 4. The Holy Land. The mist begins to clear, and the men find themselves on a wide river flanked by dense pine forests. The ship drifts in the dissipating haze. Dim light plays on the gently shifting surface of the water as the ship floats by the looming riverside trees. The horizon is obscured by a chalk-white veil of vapor, and all about is cast in a cold wintry light. Hypnotic wavelets dance on the gently coursing waters. A glorious sun casts warm rays over a verdant green forest by the river. Gorm frowns and looks over the side. Eirik's posture straightens and he knits his brow.
There's a river.
Gorm and Eirik take in their surroundings. Eirik stands and looks around. Lush green trees sway peacefully in the breeze. One eye and the boy glance back at the others from the prow of the ship. The image fades to black. Pale, slender trees reach skyward, their narrow trunks sparsely adorned but for shocks of bushy vegetation at their upper reaches. The hills and valleys bristle with thick forestation. A placid body of water sits in a valley whose rearing slopes are carpeted with bracken. A deployment of 7 or so men leaves the ship and heads inland. Amongst them is One Eye. He looks back at the boy, who has been left by the ship with Kare. The men trek off into the wilderness. A little way up the hill, the men have spread out. Gaunt and bearded with dark hair and beady eyes, Hawk turns away from the party and climbs a steep gradient towards a gap in the trees. He leans against a stick as he walks. His sword is slung over his back in its scabbard. Hagen follows Eirik through the undergrowth. Standing alone at a high elevation, one of the men shoots an arrow down into the trees. Somewhere on the hillside, Gorm starts at the noise. Hawk heaves himself up the slope and stops to gaze up at the beauty of the clouds against the blue sky. Eirik and Hagen listen intently to the noises of their surroundings. Eirik cocks his head at the sound of distant hooting. The men stare at the swaying vegetation, dense enough to conceal any number of unknown dangers. Arik's party move on. Amongst them are Hagen, One Eye, Gorm, and one other. They descend uneven ground through bushy leaves and amble towards an almost sheer drop. One Eye stops as Eirik and Gorm go on. He turns and scans the forest suspiciously. A sudden gust disturbs the surrounding undergrowth. One Eye continues after Eirik and Gorm. The five men wander across flat grasslands at the foot of the hillside forests. Their pace quickens as they near a row of trees on a grass verge up ahead. Eirik looks left and right with a hawkish glint in his eye. The men stop by a conspicuous pole standing upright in the earth, like some testament to ritual. They cast their eyes towards the trees. Eirik draws his sword. A rickety wooden structure is nestled amongst the firs. One Eye breaks apart from the men and strolls forward into the trees to investigate. The wooden structure is one of many. One Eye looks up to see a withered corpse held aloft on a wooden platform atop four tall legs. One Eye studies the body without expression. Eirik, Gorm and Hagen venture into the midst of the graveyard with their weapons at the ready. A desiccated skull surveys the men from atop a platform. Its eye sockets have been decorated, and it wears a headscarf adorned with white feathers. The body on the platform seems to have been mummified and is surrounded by strange artifacts. One Eye stands deadly still, his eye roving. He has a vision. Hawk, vivid red against a monochrome landscape. He is bare-chested. His eyes are wild, and his face and body are smeared with strange markings. A cross flanked by two figures. Hawk pointing. One Eye stands alone a little way from Gorm, Hagen, and Eirik, who stand together.
I'm going to show them a man of God has arrived.
One Eye stands on the flat, windswept grassland, staring at a giant wooden cross the men have erected by the clustered trees. It's the cross from his vision. The men are gathered just beyond it, talking. Axe in hand, One Eye turns away and marches back across the grassland. Breathless from his ascent, Hawk sits alone amongst the wild shrubs and plant life. On hearing a noise, he turns his head. Seeing nothing, he draws his sword. He stands sharply and pads nimbly down the grassy bank in a battle-ready stance. Scratchy brambles hang in his way, obscuring his view of the boot-flattened pathway. He stalks along with the blade angled in front of him. Eirik and the others have returned to the water's edge.
So, for naught in the Holy Land.
Hagen lifts his gaze.
Then where the hell are we?
Kare looks up to see One Eye approaching across the grasslands. He's holding Hawk's sword. One Eye walks up to the men and stabs the sword down into the soil. He stands back from the sword and looks at the men.
Where did you get that?
They all look at One Eye, who stares off into the distance. Eirik gets up and slowly walks over to him. One Eye stands motionless as Eirik approaches him. The boy watches, his eyes narrowed. The breeze ruffles his long blonde hair.
Where is he?
Hello!
The men tramp through a bracken-covered hillside. One Eye continues to stare into space. Tree branches wave in the breeze.
He killed him. One Eye's going to kill us all. One by one.
One Eye looks out towards mountains in the distance. Wisps of white mist float across the shimmering surface of the river. Kare and Eirik sit on grass at the riverside.
I had a dream about this once. I couldn't find my way home. And then I realized I was dead.
What are we going to do about our friend?
Leave his sword. If he finds it, it's God's will. We have to keep moving, find out where we are.
Dark water ripples across the wide river. Eirik holds the tiller as One Eye and the men row the longship. A wall of trees rises up on the riverbank, shrouded in mist. Ah! One of the men flails back, shot with an arrow. The others look around, concerned as they keep rowing. The man reaches out in desperation.
It's a fucking man! Yes! Fucking mush!
Leave him!
Ah! Help me!
Fuck off!
Ah! Let's get a sword and fight! Ah!
No! Shut the fuck up! Ah! Move!
They climb out of the ship and wade ashore. Eirik holds his sword aloft. The men walk onto the muddy riverbank, looking around anxiously. Dark clouds hang above the river and forest. Part 5. Hell. Standing amongst bracken is the primitive platform made of tree branches. On top is the decomposing corpse. Nearby, One Eye stands staring out at the dense forest and river beyond. The sky is white. Sunlight shimmers on the surface of the water. The boy sits hunched, staring pensively at One Eye. At the waterside, Kare washes blood off the arrow their man was shot with. Kare stands facing Eirik and holds up the arrowhead.
Look at this. Stone. Not iron.
They're primitives. God brought us out of that mist for a reason. We claim this land in his name.
He raises the sword.
How do we do that? We're half starved. Three men dead. One missing.
Eirik holds out a round flask to Kari. Kari drops the arrowhead, takes the flask and holds it in the palm of his hand. He drinks from the flask. As light begins to fade, the boy, One Eye, and the group of men stand in a clearing of tufty grass near the riverbank. Eirik walks up to them holding the flask. He offers the flask to One Eye. He takes it with both hands, slowly raises it to his lips, and drinks. One Eye slowly lowers the flask. The boy looks down solemnly. Eirik offers the flask to the next man, Hagen, who takes it. Hagen wears a harsh, malevolent expression. One Eye turns and looks towards the bank of trees in the distance. Beyond is a mountain. One Eye turns back to face the men. His eye roves woozily. He has a vision of a barren red land and men beating a man to death. Bare rocks stretch into the distance. Hagen stands alone on a hillside of dense bracken. Hagen is motionless. Elsewhere, Gorm stands alone, staring blankly into space. He looks around. Eirik walks along holding sword and scabbard. The boy drinks from the flask. One Eye is crouched at the water's edge. He holds two knives crossed over one another. The cross shape is reflected in the dark water. One Eye stands staring down at the water. Gorm is hunched behind bracken. Holding an axe, One Eye wades through the water to rocks jutting out into the river. The boy steps carefully along a shallow winding tributary, head bowed, staring down at the shallow stream of water. Eirik stands at the water's edge, clutching the sword in both hands. One Eye picks up a large rock and places it on top of another. He squats down and runs his hands over its smooth surface. Gorm holds his face low against the water until his nose touches the surface, sending out delicate ripples. Hagen tramps across the thick, tufty grass towards the river. Gorm lies on his side on the dark, almost black mud flats. Eirik stands in the water clutching the sword and staring up at the cloudy sky. He plunges the sword into a bank of grass. Gorm lies in the mud, his eyes stare blankly. Hagen tramps over, leans down, and rolls Gorm onto his front. The boy sits in the bracken. Eirik lifts his muddy hands out of the water and turns them over. Kare crawls along the mudflats on his hands and knees. Kare digs his hands into the dark mud. One Eye carries a rock over to a stack of rocks he's piled up. They collapse. Hagen unsheaths a dagger. The boy stares open-mouthed. Hagen mounts Gorm, and with a dagger in both hands, he stabs at the mud. Hagen clutches Gorm's limp head. One Eye piles up more rocks. His face contorted, Hagen thrusts his body against Gorm's. Kare gazes up at the sky. One Eye rests his hand on top of his pile of rocks. Hagen forces Gorm's face into the mud as he thrusts against him. The boy stares transfixed. An inverted sea of red surges. Hagen lies on top of Gorm. One Eye caresses his rock pile. Gorm lifts his blackened, glistening face out of the mud. Hagen walks across marshland. Standing in front of trees is the tall cross. By the river, Kare looks weary. Hagen clenches his muddy fist. One Eye stands beside his pile of rocks, which is taller than he is. Another man smiles euphorically. One Eye gazes off into the distance. One Eye's shoulders heave as he breathes heavily. In his vision, his face is briefly tinged red. His eye roves. The dark wall of trees beside the river is topped with mist. The sky above is white. The river steadily flows past the moored ship. One Eye is motionless beneath the greying sky. He stares into the distance. A man walks across marshland towards One Eye, who watches him approach. The man is Hawk. He wears a loincloth and has dry red-brown earth caked on his body. He has zigzag markings on his chest and face. His eyes stare wildly at One Eye, who bows his head. Eirik stands nearby.
Can you hear me?
One Eye slowly lifts his head to look at Hawk, whose eyes are locked on him. Eirik stands with his hands resting on the hilt of the sword.
We left your sword. Can you not hear him? He talks. Who?
Hawk points a shaky finger at One Eye.
One Eye.
What's he saying?
He says we're in hell.
One Eye stares at Hawk inscrutably. His eye slowly rolls upwards. Eirik stands watching, Hagen joins them, and the boy sits on the grass nearby.
I told you. He brought us here.
We have to leave this place. We have to go into the forest.
Is he speaking through you now?
It's the only way out.
What do you mean, out?
Home.
We have to go back.
Back to that mist. Have you lost your mind?
We have to find salt water. That's the road out of here.
No.
We stay and show them what men are capable of when they act in the name of God. We've raised the cross. Now we bring the sword. The heathen will be converted, their sins cleansed, a new Jerusalem established.
You promised us riches and a holy lands. Well, one eye took us to hell, and there is no God.
Hagen stands staring at Eirik challengingly. Kare surveys the scene. Hagen pulls a knife, One Eye pounces, strikes him with his axe and slits his throat with his knife. Two of the other men attack, and One Eye dispatches them with his axe and knife. Blood pours from Hagen's neck. One Eye stands over Hagen and raises his axe.
No!
One Eye brings his axe down on Hagen, killing him. As One Eye goes and pulls his knife out of one of his victims, the boy stands up. Eirik and Kare watch One Eye walk off across the grass. The boy shifts on his feet. One Eye stops and looks back at the boy, who stares at Eirik for a moment, then trudges off after One Eye. The boy walks up to One Eye. They look at each other for a moment, then walk off towards the dark forest. Kare watches One Eye and the boy walk off.
We need to follow him.
Eirik's brow is heavily pinched as he takes this in. Hawk sits on the ground behind him. Eirik slowly steps towards Kare. Eirik wraps his arms around Kare and hugs him tightly.
My lifelong friend, will you turn your back on me?
Eirik draws a knife and stabs Kare in the side. He pulls out the knife and Kare staggers.
Go on then. Turn your back on God. Only men of faith deserve the riches of my new Jerusalem.
Kare wanders off in the direction One Eye went. Heavy rain dapples the surface of the river. Part 6. The Sacrifice. Eirik kneels in front of the cross, clutching the sword, with his head resting against the hilt. He lifts his head and stands with his back to the cross. Heavy-browed, he looks out at the river. Hawk kneels on the grass beside him.
I will build crosses up and down the river to guide our brothers when they come to join us. They'll bring women. Our cities will stand for 1,000 years. And you...
He points at Hawk.
Spiritual advisor in my new Jerusalem.
Eirik looks out at the river. Hawk starts to laugh and Eirik slowly turns and stares at him, stony-faced. One Eye and the boy tramp up a wooded hillside. They pass the bleached white skeleton of a fallen tree. Eirik stands waist-deep in gently rippling water with his arms stretched out at his sides. One Eye stops and looks back down towards the river. As if out of nowhere, arrows fly at Eirik and pierce his chest and back. Up on the hill, the boy frowns incredulously. One eye turns away. Eirik slowly sinks into the water, sending out gentle ripples across the surface. Clutching his side where Eirik stabbed him, Kari makes his way up the hill a little way behind One Eye and the boy. Kari stops and looks at his hand, which is covered in blood. Kari looks up wearily. The boy and One Eye clamber past the exposed roots of a recently fallen tree. Kari follows some way behind. The boy joins One Eye near the top of the hill. They stop and look at Gorm, who stands lower down, staring up at them. Gorm stares intensely, his face blackened with dirt. One Eye and the boy turn and walk on up the hill. Gorm follows, as does Kare, a little way behind. Gorm and Kare follow One Eye and the boy along a tufty grass ridge. Dark rolling mountains loom in the distance. The boy and One Eye clamber up a steep slope on all fours. Gorm and Kare follow, grabbing onto clumps of grass. One Eye stops to look back at the others. The boy is sitting on the grass. Gorm stands staring at One Eye, and Kare struggles up the slope behind them. One Eye walks on with the boy on his back. The boy has his arms draped over One Eye's shoulders and his head flopped forward. The others follow as they tramp up another grassy slope. Dark grey clouds hang in a chilling white sky. Gorm stands looking out at the wide, winding river. Dark mountains rise up on the far bank. Kare sits amongst bushes.
Could I ever forgive my father for bringing me to this place?
I came here to beg forgiveness from my sons. I wasn't there when they died in battle.
One Eye stands silhouetted against harsh white sunlight.
It matters, doesn't it? How I leave.
The boy sits with his lank blonde hair flopped in front of his face.
Yes. He says I'm going to reach the sea. I'm going to build a new boat. I'm going to go home.
Gorm looks curious.
What does he say about me?
The boy looks up at One Eye, who turns to him.
You're going to die.
Then he's lying.
If he's lying, why are you following him?
The boy looks at Gorm, his features set in a frown. One Eye stares into the distance with the bright sun behind him. Gorm looks down.
Why did I come here when I... Why did I have to go through this? Tell me.
Dark, muscular clouds hang overhead. One Eye looks at Gorm. The boy looks at Gorm with his eyes narrowed.
I have to go back. I have to be with my father. Even if he's dead.
Gorm looks at Kare.
Your sons are dead. And you came here to be with them.
Gorm walks off down the hill. Holding his axe, One Eye watches him go, with the boy beside him. One Eye walks off the way Gorm went. The boy steps over to Kare. Kare smiles slightly at the boy, who walks off after One Eye. Fluffy white clouds hang in a pale blue sky. Kare sits motionless, his eyes narrowed. A couple of flies buzz around in front of his craggy, lined face. Kare slowly lowers his eyes. The river and mountains stretch out in front of him. The sky has turned a rich, luscious, dark blue. Bright sunlight gleams on banks of white cloud, tinged blue-grey. One Eye and the boy tramp through thick bracken. One Eye's shoulders brush past the fine leaves, which are at the boy's head height. One Eye and the boy head down a slope. A large grey rock rises up out of the bushes. They reach a large expanse of grey rock and walk across its surface. Smooth undulations give way to fractures, craggy outcrops and irregular stacks. The grey rock is dappled with patches of white and vivid orange lichen. One Eye and the boy walk across the rock, which leads to the water's edge. The boy clambers down and lies on the rough surface. He dips his hand into the water and tastes it. One Eye stands looking out at a vast body of water. A bird flies past. One Eye looks down at the boy who sits on the rock. Water gently laps against it.
The salt.
A thoughtful smile crosses One Eye's face and he looks out across the ocean. One Eye turns and looks inland. Standing like statues on the rocks a few feet away are several natives. They wear loincloths strapped around their waists, and their bodies and faces are painted with rusty red-brown pigment. They have darker slashes of brown across their chests. They hold long sticks with bulbous ends. Cudgels. One Eye looks at the boy who stares at the natives, open-mouthed, his eyes flitting nervously. One Eye grasps the boy's arm and looks at him earnestly for a moment. One Eye turns and walks across rocks which have been darkened by water. He heads towards the natives who stand on higher, dry, light grey rocks. One Eye drops his knife and axe as he approaches a bald-headed brute of a man, looking round at him as he passes him. The boy watches One Eye walk amongst the natives, who stand staring at him. One of the natives has a shaved head apart from a long ponytail hanging down over his shoulder. One Eye stands surrounded by a group of natives. They have dark lines painted across their faces. One Eye glances around with a calm expression, then closes his eye. A flashback of One Eye wading waist deep in the wide river, the forest rising up on the banks. On the rocks, a native clubs One Eye around the back of the head with his cudgel. One Eye flops forward onto the ground, the other natives move in and beat One Eye repeatedly. One Eye's stack of rocks stands at the riverside. One Eye sinks down beneath the surface of the water. Beside the ocean, the boy stands staring at the natives. They slowly turn and walk away, inland. The boy turns and looks out at the ocean. The water's surface gently ripples. Ocean and sky take on a deep blue tint. The boy is cast into shadow. Gently swirling blurry water gives way to dark mountains shrouded in dense grey mist. Clear water gently ripples. Below the surface are rust-coloured rocks. Partially obscured by the grey mist, the slope of a mountainside gently rises. The pale grey mist thickens and envelops the mountainside. One Eye's face briefly appears out of the mist, then vanishes.